these couch potatoes across the country, around the world, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr.
And I'm Neil Miller, and you're listening once again to Fat Guys at the Movies. And we've foregone our initial desire to do the show as Daleks to bring you a show about movies as humans this week.
Yes, because we decided that the Dalek show would get old. We couldn't even get through the entire name of the show before it just got annoying.
Right, exactly.
And that was annoying to us. So, wow.
Indeed. So you should count your lucky stars this week that we are speaking to you in what is closely resembling English.
Well, or thank your lucky stars. You can count your blessings and thank your lucky stars.
You can do whatever you want.
Get your metaphors right,
anyway.
Dude.
Before we get into the movies of the week, we've got two big ones this week. Well, one big one and a movie with Josh Brolin in it.
He does not play the president.
Exactly.
You know what? I would love to see a movie where Josh Brolin played Barack Obama. That would be awesome. They should just do a movie. Oliver Stone needs to make a movie about every president from now on, starring Josh Brolin.
Okay, anyway, here's how you can get a hold of us. You can go over to fatguysthemovies.com. You can get us on iTunes. Make sure you go to iTunes and give us a review. We would greatly appreciate that. No. You can email us, fatguys@filmschoolrejects.com. You can leave us a voicemail, area code 614-388-8735, which I believe we have one this week.
Yes, we do.
And you can get us on Twitter. I'm at twitter.com/rejects. Kevin's twitter.com/KevinCarr. Or you can get us on Facebook. You can get us by tracking us down on the street as well.
If you want to.
If you'd like to.
Please don't.
Well,
you can track Neil down. You throw a milkshake at him.
I don't go on the street.
You're from the street.
I don't.
You're from the cul-de-sac.
In fact, it's funny. One of my form spring questions this week that I have not answered yet is, why haven't I seen you around lately? Where you been hiding? And
was it from anybody or?
No, not from anyone who wanted to identify themselves. And I don't have a bookie or any debts to gangsters, so I'm a little freaked out.
Yeah, it could be your hairdresser, because your mom does your hair in Cleveland. But
yeah,
but who does your hair in Texas?
I just go to a place, Bird's Barbershop. It's pretty cool.
Oh. Awesome. See, now you know. People just hang around Bird's Barbershop.
There's five of them in Austin. So
at least once a month, he'll show up there.
Once every 2 months at this point.
Wow. You're so scruffy.
But it was interesting that someone asked me where I've been. They haven't seen me around. It calls into question what around means, as in, like, there are only a few places I ever go in the first place. So, I have a feeling it's probably just someone who sees me at screenings or whatever.
Yeah, probably.
Because that happens. I do go to screenings.
Do you get recognized? Do people squeal? And I got recognized. You know what's funny? When I went and saw did I mention this last week?
Nope.
When I went and saw the A-Team last week, I had to go to Cleveland, and I ran into a guy who had heard me on the radio in, like, Chillicothe, Ohio.
Oh, nice.
It's weird.
Chillicothe. Represent.
Yeah. That's right, man. You want to talk about movies?
maybe.
Okay.
The first one is a movie that neither one of us have seen. It is the supernatural western Jonah Hex, in which Josh Brolin has a messed up face and Megan Fox has a messed up accent.
This mark will remind you of the man who took everything you had. After that night, some say he was a changed man, that his spirit crossed over, giving him powers that can't be explained.
Jonah Hex.
Five coffins. Thinking you might need eight.
You didn't get to see this.
No.
I didn't get to see it.
I'm going to go see this weekend, because I'm
here's the
curious
thing.
To see how it turned out.
It doesn't necessarily get a preemptive suck because they just didn't screen it in all markets. They screened it in Cleveland. And at the time of recording, we haven't haven't gone up to see it yet, but I will have seen it by this weekend because I'm going up to Cleveland to see it because they're doing like two screenings that day, and I'm going to bring my kids because I'm an irresponsible dad and I take them to movies with bustiers and westerns and guns and stuff like that.
Right.
So I will. I have a chance
though.
Yeah, I mean, it's not
it's
like
probably safe. I mean, yeah, for your kids, not for
my
anybody
kids.
Else's kids.
They see a lot of stuff. Trust me. I showed them Invasion of the Body Snatchers last week and made them watch the set because they saw the first one, the original from 1956, and then my son Liam was talking smack. He's like, that wasn't scary at all because it scared me as a kid. I didn't sleep for weeks.
Right.
And then my son's like, yo, it didn't scare me at all. So I made them sit and watch the 1978 remake, which is way more intense.
Mm-hmm.
And they still didn't have any trouble sleeping because – that's the 70s. They're like, whatever, that's not scary anymore.
Yeah.
I was depressed.
Fair enough.
But anyway,
so Jonah Hex.
Jonah Hex, yeah. Are any thoughts on it from the trailer aspect? I mean, do you think it's going to be good?
You know, I have a little hope for Jonah Hex in the sense that Jimmy Hayward, who did Horton Hears a Who, is directing.
I hear it's basically
it.
The
Just
same
go
movie.
With it. It's got a decent cast. John Malkovich, Josh Brolin, Michael Fassbender is in it. And I think.
Do you know who John Malkovich plays in this?
He plays the villain.
He plays John Malkovich.
Well, I mean, of course. Michael Fassbender, who I think is one of the best working actors in the world.
What else has he been in?
He was in Hunger. He was in. He was the British guy in Inglourious Basterds, which is where you would know him from.
That was Michael Myers.
No, Archie Hitchcock's the. He was the British undercover guy, the one with who held up three wrong.
Yes.
But he's a fantastic actor. He's done a couple really great indie projects. And
then there's this Megan Fox.
Megan Fox, you know, that could go one of two ways. Either Megan Fox is going to be a forgettable performance, memorable wardrobe, or she's just going to be terrible. And either way, I feel like that could be entertaining.
Oh, I think you're right. I think she is going to be the standout performance in a good way for the movie, but in a bad way for the audience.
For Megan Fox, the serious actress.
Well, because I'm watching the trailers, and she's trying to do this sort of like Western accent, yeah. And she is just awful in the trailers. In the trailers, you can't pull it off. Come on.
Right. So I think, you know, I think I like Josh Brolin. The action looks kind of fun. It could work. You know, although, I mean, I've heard problems from the production. There were a lot of reshoots and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
It really, Jonah Hex is really a toss-up. I would, if I were our listeners, I would wait until the weekend when Film School Rejects posts its review, because Rob Hunter is going to be reviewing it. So if Rob Hunter gives it a positive review, it's worth seeing. Because that guy
hates
everything.
Well, and there will also be the... And there'll also be the FSR report card where I'll be going
yes,
as well.
Where you will review it as well. So I would really hold back. It's not as easy a choice as the movie we're going to talk about in the next segment.
Yeah.
You know.
And arguably, Rob is a little bit kinder to movies. Well, no, Rob is a little more discerning to movies than I am.
Yeah.
I'll watch it. I'll be like, hey, it's got stuff blowing up and it's fun.
So he leans negative where you lean positive.
Yes.
So, you know. But you know, I will say this. I have hope for it. The trailers are not bad. I've probably going in expecting it to be terrible, hoping that it'll be good.
I just hope it doesn't try and be too serious. I hope it's sort of
it
like...
It needs to embrace some of the ridiculousness, even though the comic was a very serious, dark
yeah,
comic.
But I mean,
but
if they go in with the same attitude they did with, like, Ghost Rider, I think it'll be okay.
Fair enough. When we come back, we're going to talk about another movie.
All right.
And we have returned.
Boom.
This is Fat Guys at the Movies. I'm Neil Miller. That's Kevin Carr. Over there on the other side of the magical studio in the sky, which does not get any bird infestations.
What? What are you talking about?
This is another...
About?
I was reading Formspring, all the questions I've been asked on Formspring, and one of them was, does the magical studio in the sky ever get bird infestations? And or, like, do birds ever fly into it or whatever? Because, you know, it's in the sky.
Okay. No, it's magical, so we don't...
And, right, so it's not actually in the sky.
Well, it's in the sky in a magical sense. And we have a magical force field that protects us from birds. Because if we got birds in here, it'd just get ugly. There'd be poop everywhere. Right. And we got enough poop to deal with.
There'd be more poop.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Speaking of which, I gotta point this out. I was watching BBC's Life. Have you seen that Blu-ray? It's fantastic.
No, I haven't yet.
The BBC Earth series is just fantastic. It's beautiful. It looks great on Blu-ray. It's literally
narrated by British people.
What?
It's fantastic. It's narrated by British people.
Well, and this one's narrated by Oprah Winfrey, which is the downfall. But this one, it's gorgeous. But it reminds me in watching this that I had a biology professor once said that all nature is about eating, sex, and poop. And that's what it is. And if you watch it, they really skimp on the poop. Have
but
I said
they have
poop
eating
enough
and
in
the sex. That's
they
that's
do.
Nice.
That's what it's all about. It's all about
that's
eating
lovely.
And sex.
Well, speaking of eating and sex, we're going to move on to our next movie, which is the sure thing of the summer, in my mind.
Tell me about it.
Is every time Pixar releases a movie, you know it's going to be worth seeing, so it's almost not even worth reviewing. But we've got 8 minutes left in this segment, so we're going to have to talk about it.
Yeah.
It is Toy Story 3 in 3D, and Andy is heading off to college, and the rest of the toys are sent to daycare purgatory.
Don't you get it? We're finished, obsolete, over the hill.
Now, come on, guys. We all knew this day was coming.
We're getting thrown away?
No, no one's getting thrown away.
We ain't ever getting played with.
Hold on. This is no time to be hysterical.
It's the perfect time to be hysterical.
Should we be hysterical?
Now.
Yes.
Maybe, but not right now.
Come on. Let's see how much we're going for on eBay.
New toys!
I'm gonna get played with!
Where's my nose?
Here it is.
Here's your arm.
Give me that. That's
Honey,
mine.
The mustache?
You want to take first crack at this?
Sure. I'm fresh off of seeing it.
As am I.
It's like 12 hours ago at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lovely film. And it's a sentimental film that really ties together the Toy Story, you know, franchise extremely well. It's, as you've come to expect from Pixar, a beautifully animated film. It's a story with a lot of heart. You will cry. You will laugh. All of these things. It's a wonderful movie.
Now, when you said like, because I was curious about that with you because I saw your tweet after seeing it, and you said it's lovely, and I didn't. Sometimes lovely can be like you fawning over it, but also lovely could be somewhat sarcastic to be like, oh, that's just lovely.
Oh no, it's. I mean, in the most earnest sense, it is a lovely film. It's a. And you know what? It's not as what I found interesting is that there were a lot of people who saw it here in Austin the day before they screened it for regular press, and there were a lot of people who said they cried just like they did in Up, and I didn't see it there because it's not as an emotional, gut wrenching human story as what you had with Up. In Toy Story, there's this. It's a very sentimental sense. You know, and if you've grown up, as I have, with the Toy Story franchise, it's as it kind of works its way toward its end, there's this very kind of calm slowness to it that kind of reminded me of the way Battlestar Galactica ended, where it's just okay. Kind of, you know, not in the same exact same
there
sense,
are
but
few,
the tone
few,
of
there
it.
There are fewer Cylons in Toy Story.
The tone of it, that it just kind of eases into this very touching ending.
Yeah.
And I really like that about it. And well, it didn't make me, you know, cry per se.
It didn't make you weep, but you teared up.
But I teared up a little bit. And you know what? It's a really fun adventure story.
Well, you know, the difference in the crying, because they did early interviews with the director. And so they did an early screening just for people who were doing interviews. I wasn't in on it, but I know somebody who was like 2 weeks ago. And he saw it, and his response was, I cried. And I remember him saying he cried it up, too. But it's different, whereas Up has that first 10 minutes will just rip your heart out and go, you know, and
right.
And there's two cry moments in it. There's the beginning, they have a thing in the beginning where you're like, oh, well, that wasn't too bad. But then you get to the end and you're just like, I see what he's talking about. But it is very different than Up in the sense that it has two moments that could make you tear up. But I thought it was, it touches different emotions. I mean, Up is about a man and his soulmate and their life that could have been, whereas this is about saying goodbye. And it's a different, it's about growing up, and it's a different type of emotion that I saw it with my kids, and that I think part of it as well. And I've got to go home this summer, and you know, we got a toy room or a playroom downstairs. We got to clean it up and throw out a lot of toys, and I now feel really guilty about that.
Getting rid of it. You got to donate it to the Sunnyside.
That's right. Well, I feel even more guilty, but
yeah. But I think similarly to Up, there's this really great adventure story kind of in the middle.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun, and it's very funny, and there's moments that the kids will laugh at, and there's moments that the adults will laugh at, mm-hmm. and there's moments that everyone will laugh at. And I think that's really the magic of Pixar, mm-hmm. is that the story is always their top priority.
Yeah.
And the animation, the 3D in Toy Story 3 is the best. It's the most beautiful film you're going to see this year.
Well, and what's funny is
there's nothing that anyone else can do that will make a more beautiful film than this. But really, when it comes down to it, the story is great, and
they've done it three times, which is what's amazing. In fact, I'm going to be watching this weekend with a bunch of people on Twitter on Saturday night. We're going to be live tweeting the first two Toy Stories. So hit us up on Twitter, KevinCarr at twitter.com/KevinCarr, if you want to. I'm a shill, but anyways. It's going to be interesting watching those because people forget the first Toy Story is, what, like 15 years old?
Mm-hmm.
And and it's not as much the toys, you know, because they're plastic. They're going to look the same. The humans look vastly way more evolved.
Well, it's interesting because when you watch I've seen the double feature, the 3D double feature.
Mm-hmm.
Of the first two, and you can see the evolution. If you watched all three in a row, you can see the evolution of the animation.
Oh yeah,
and you're right. A lot of it has to do with the environment. The environment gets a lot better.
The background and the humans, but even the textures on the soldiers and on Rex, and you know, even on Woody, his clothes, mm-hmm. and that kind of thing. You do notice it's evolved considerably.
Right, and the 3D is a wonderful addition with Toy Story 3, where it really does give these characters a depth and a fullness, and it's when you first start to see it, it's breathtaking, you know.
What's interesting is I saw, I had an interesting sort of journey in watching this. Is you know, it starts and has a great opening sequence that I'm going to compare it to the opening sequence of Bolt. Where you're just like, this is what I've always kind of wanted to see, and it's fantastic. And then it kind of goes into Toy Story mode. And I'd say about the first 30 minutes, though, I was like, well, it's a good movie, but it's not fantastic. It really kind of had that, you know, lower-level direct-to-video sequel where you're like, okay, we've kind of rehashed some of this, some of the emotions, some of the discussions before about toys, yard sales and being given away and that sort of thing. And I'm like, it's okay. And then it kind of hits this stride about 45 minutes in. Where it becomes the greatest escape movie ever, and it just hits the stride, and it doesn't stop, and it's like, and it's at this moment, and I'm going to just say it's in the vending machine, is when it takes off, and I was like, wow, and then it doesn't stop, and that's what I was so impressed. Whereas like it takes a little bit of time to get into it, but once it hits that moment, it just keeps going and going and going. And it went from being kind of like, it was a good movie, I'd recommend it, to being the best movie of the year so far.
Yeah, well, and I think, and it's funny because there is a moment in the trailer where you see Buzz Lightyear speaking Spanish.
Yeah.
And in the trailer, it looks ridiculous, it looks silly, but Pixar makes everything like that work.
And it's not just the joke. I'm sorry, what were you saying?
It feels seamless within the story, and it's really great.
And it's also there's a lot of things in the show like that where you know that's coming because you've seen it in the trailer, and it's not just this one-off joke. It's like, no, they take it farther and they do more with it, and it's not just something that, oh, I saw it in the trailer, so it's good. They go beyond it. And same thing with the Barbie and Ken stuff. That's in the trailer, but there's so much more to it.
Exactly. I'm saying totally rocks on Toy Story.
Me too.
It's easily one of the best movies I've seen. Probably the best movie I've seen all year so far.
If you're talking theatrical releases, best movie of the year so far, it's the first one I'm actually giving like a 5-star grade to.
Yeah.
So,
and that's, I guess, to be expected.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Toy Story. It's Pixar.
Yep.
So when we come back, we're going to talk about how much money it's going to make.
Miles of hard road, 33 years of tough luck, 44 skulls buried in the ground, crawling down through the muck.
Oh, yeah.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies. Now that we've gushed all over Toy Story 2, or 3, and 2, I mean, 2, Toy Story 1, 2, and 3 are all awesome movies.
All them Toy Story movies.
Well, no, it's odd for there to be 3 consecutive movies, even though there's a more than a 10-year difference between part 2 and part 3. It's very rare for 3 movies in a series to, at least for me, to hold them at equal level.
Well, and I think it's even more strange for them to, in my mind, get better. And I think on the whole, they get better. Because of, you know, whether it's the animation and the evolution of storytelling and things like that, each movie is a little bit better than the other.
Well, yeah, I don't know if I
there might be some sense of nostalgia that makes you say, like, oh, well, I really love Toy Story 2 because I saw it at this point in my life. But if you look at just technical filmmaking, storytelling, they've gotten better.
I don't know. I mean, I would say that, but you know what? Every time I go back and watch Toy Story, which I've seen the first two, I've only seen Toy Story 3 once, but I've seen the first two Toy Stories at least 5 or 6 times. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes, and the last couple of times, because I saw the double feature, and when they came out with the 10th anniversary DVDs, I saw those, you know, together. Mm-hmm. Every time I watch it, and I'm going to watch them again this weekend, and we'll see. I really think that that's a bold statement to say, they've gotten better. I mean, they're all equal. I mean, obviously, technically, they've gotten better. But there's a certain amount of just awesomeness about the first one that they're different. That's the thing. They're different. They're three different stories.
But I honestly think that they've gotten better. Each one delivers, an equal or greater experience.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that.
Which is tough to do when you get 3 movies deep.
What do you think? How do you think it's going to do this weekend?
I think it's going to kill.
I think
it's going to be the highest opening weekend of the summer.
I don't know if it's the other two movies it's got coming that would kind of like sort of like be the top number one sort of like opening weekend. You've got Twilight and Harry Potter both coming in July. Those are going to be hard to win. But I do think it's easily going to be in the top 3 openings of the summer.
Wait, what's coming in July? Harry Potter?
Harry Potter and
I thought
Twilight.
Harry Potter was in December.
No, it's in... Oh, wait, is it in December? I don't know. But Eclipse is coming in July.
Okay.
Eclipse,
well, yeah, no, you have Twilight coming, which is going to be...
That's going to be hard to beat.
Yes, very hard to beat. But I think, you know, you look at Iron Man... 128 million. I think Toy Story could beat it.
I really think it's going to have 100 plus million over the weekend. And here's the reason. It is that ultimate 4 quadrant appeal.
Yes.
So everyone wants to see it. I think it's got the franchise behind it. It's getting great buzz.
Yeah, it's in fact, fantastic. I would honestly feel sorry for the person who put the first negative review up on Rotten Tomatoes. Because it's so far, it's 100% solidarity from critics. This movie is the movie.
Yeah, and unlike something like WALL-E, which did well, and Up, which did well, both of those did well in their opening, but there's something, the Toy Story is even more for kids. It's for kids, but adults love it as well. I've talked to people just in general when I tell them, like yesterday I was out, and I said, oh, I'm going to go see Toy Story. And they're like, oh, I got to find kids to go see that with. Like they're, I guess, scouting the playground.
Right.
So yeah, I think you're talking 100 plus.
Scouting the playground? That's not
Maybe not.
That's not safe.
That may not be what happened. Actually.
Anyway, but I mean, my hope is that, I really honestly don't think Twilight has the chutzpah to be... The highest grossing movie of the summer. I really feel like not only does Toy Story 3 deserve it, but Pixar has earned that.
Yeah.
You know, and with a lot of the big blockbuster movies coming out over the last month or two, you know, stuff like Iron Man 2 was kind of a disappointment. You know, it made a lot of money, but it wasn't as good as the first.
Yeah.
And Robin Hood was a terrible disappointment. And since then, we haven't had anything that really you look at and you say, this deserves to make hundreds of millions of dollars.
Well, the other thing is next week, you've got Grown Ups and Night and Day, neither of which are going to really draw from the audience. The following week, you have The Last Airbender and Twilight, which are going to open, but it's still... Last Airbender, maybe. It's going to suck up some 3D theaters and that sort of stuff, but I still think there's nothing... even close that's going to top it. I do think it's going to be a monster hit. I think it's going to be a massive hit, and it deserves it. It totally does.
I agree. I agree. And if you look at it, when you think about, because I think Twilight's an interesting one to talk about, in the sense that the last Twilight movie barely scratched $300 million, $296 million domestic. Which is big, but I really feel like Twilight has hit its maximum.
Here's the other thing with Twilight. I think Twilight, the last two Twilight movies came out in November.
Yeah.
There's a certain, there's a pack mentality to the movies, I think it's fair to say. And there was everybody going to the midnight show because it was the midnight show and everyone had to go to school on Friday. And so they wanted to see it as early as possible. I don't know if it's going to get that. I mean, Twilight's still going to be a massive hit.
Right. But it's still going to make around $300 million.
But I think its opening weekend money is going to be spread out a little bit more over the weekend as opposed to being so front loaded because everyone's going to want to see it at midnight. And there's still going to be that, but you can still then wake up and see it at 10 o'clock on Friday morning as well.
Right. Right. And so. I think what's interesting is that you have, when you look at the year's box office, and the highest one is Alice in Wonderland at $333 million. Toy Story is a better movie. Toy Story is a sequel. It has a great deal of legacy behind it. It appeals to, like you said, four quadrants, whereas Alice in Wonderland still kind of skewed toward the family audience. I think everyone wants to see Toy Story 3, and everyone's going to want to see it multiple times. Yeah. So I think it's if there's going to be a $400 million movie this summer, it's going to be Toy Story 3.
I think so. And then there's Jonah Hex, which will make about 20.
If it's lucky.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't... I don't... the fact they're not screening it as wide. I think that people are done with Megan Fox. I don't think anybody... It's a property, but nobody knows the property outside of, like, a real limited fanboy. And even then, the fanboys aren't excited for that, so...
Right.
Yeah.
Right, so, you know.
And then I think Toy Story is going to crush The Karate Kid.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, Karate Kid will drop down into the 30s, and it'll continue to do all right. But I think Toy Story will really blow it up.
Yeah,
I would be surprised if it made less than $100 million this weekend.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do think an interesting thing I want to mention about The Karate Kid. This summer has been an odd summer simply because you had Iron Man 2 did really well, and then nothing else had really done well. Everything was a disappointment.
Right.
You know, it did okay, but it wasn't in the numbers. And then Karate Kid came out, and it did great for its budget because it was like $35 million and made like $55 million its first weekend. But it's hardly a massive opening. And I think that it irritates me when there's entertainment journalists, and I use that term loosely. Sometimes people who write box office reports, you know, people like, you know, with Brandon Gray, you know, Nikki Fink, and people like that are like, he's just like his dad. Jaden Smith is crushing the box office. And I'm like, well, not really. I mean, $55 million is good, and it's good for that movie, especially for its budget. Mm-hmm. But that's hardly groundbreaking. That's hardly super blockbuster.
Yeah.
There was a Kelly Gingery who was on the show a couple of months ago. She had sent me a link on Facebook, and she's like, oh, well, Movie Line? I think Movie Line said, oh, it was touting it as, you know, he's a big deal because it's the eighth highest June opening ever. And I said to her, I'm like, well, first of all, most of the top June openings have happened in the last 5 years.
Right.
Because just ticket prices and inflation. You know, you're not going to... There's not a movie from 1976 And then I said to her, I go, there's only been 20 June openings in the last 5 years. So it's running right around half.
Right.
You know, I mean, it
Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer opened bigger.
Yeah. And that was 3 years ago.
In 2007, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, opened just under it. And that was over 10 years ago. So not to say that The Karate Kid isn't doing well, because it is. Right. But that doesn't necessarily translate into Jaden Smith's a star. I had the same argument with when Will Smith did $800 million blockbusters, and everyone's like, oh! And, I remember people like Steve Mason were like, he's unstoppable! No one's ever done $800 million movies. I'm like, well, first of all, he only does blockbusters, A. And B, it's not hard to make $100 million nowadays in Hollywood. I mean, 20 years ago, four movies made $100 million or more. Right. Now, it's 30 or 40. You have almost a movie per week making $100 million in the long run, on average.
Right.
So, yeah. That's just my ranting about The Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Can I tell you one other thing, funny thing about Karate Kid?
Sure.
On Rotten Tomatoes, I had my pull quote was, it's not terrible, but it's a lesser movie than the original in every sense. I said every punch it throws is weaker than the one we saw in 1984. And you get what I'm saying with that, right?
Yeah.
It's a metaphor. You understand that I was not talking.
Well, yeah. No, I graduated. I passed freshman English. I understand the concept of a metaphor.
I had two people comment on my review, and one person's like, "Well, that's because they're 12-year-old kids, and they're not 18-year-old kids fighting it, so of course they're not going to punch as hard." And I literally had two comments on my Rotten Tomatoes page like that, and I was like, "Wow, really? You just plain didn't." I mean, it's one thing for one person to be stupid, but for two people to be stupid at the same time is pretty awesome.
Hey, it's that internet pack mentality, man.
That's right. We've talked too much about
it. Hey, did you know that Avatar made $64,000 at the box office last weekend?
That's still amazing. It's been out on DVD and Blu-ray for months.
Yep.
Or a month at least.
So there you go. Still raking in the cash.
We have
$750 million.
We have a voicemail from...
Yeah, let's talk about this.
The Idiot Boxers co-host, Merrill Barr. He's thrown down a challenge. Well, let's play the voicemail.
Hey, guys. Merrill from the Idiot Boxers here. This is for Neil, actually. Neil, with all the Transformers news that came out, I just want to know what your thoughts is on, the inevitable fact that Transformers 3 will be in 3D. Your thoughts on Rosie, something on the channel learning. But the other reason I'm calling is, over the weekend, two Michael Bay movies were playing on cable at the same time. So while I'm in the process of trying to keep my TV from exploding from awesomeness, I was also listening to some back episodes of Fat Guys, and I knew you were a Michael Bay fan, but goddamn, so I am issuing a challenge. I am challenging you, Neil Miller, to a Michael Bay off to determine who is the bigger Michael Bay fan. Talk to you guys later.
There you go. You've been challenged. Well, first of all, happy about the Transformers?
Is it fair for me to have a Michael Bay off with someone?
Well, I think so.
That would be taking the world's greatest UFC fighter and putting them against a high school freshman chess club member.
Are you comparing yourself to a UFC fighter?
It's not fair to anyone.
My question to you is, I would you accept the challenge?
I guess. I mean, it's kind of like picking on Slow Kid, but
whatever. Well, okay. Well, what would you think?
I mean, I like Meryl. I'm sure he knows a lot about Michael Bay, but
what's a fair challenge? What do you think's a fair challenge for Michael Bay?
I don't know. Well, I say let's do it.
Okay.
And what you could do is we have a weekend. I don't think it could be this weekend. I've got plans.
No, we got
where we have a weekend to study.
Okay.
And watch Michael Bay movies or study however we want. And you create a questionnaire.
Okay.
And then we can I don't know, we could do it on the show if you wanted. Just do you ask the questions and we answer them, see who gets more
right. We could do that.
You could be the pot bet commissioner.
I will construct the ultimate Michael Bay challenge.
Uh-huh.
And I will
win it.
We will coordinate it and we will record it and we will play it on a future show.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
I just don't think it would be fair for me to do a Michael Bay challenge with anyone in the world except for Michael Bay.
I think I could probably
beat Michael Bay at a Michael Bay challenge.
I may have to give him a call. Say, I got two co-hosts who are vying for the title of the greatest Michael Bay fan ever.
Right.
Okay, cool. Well,
I mean, I'm just knowledgeable
accepted.
About the man's films.
Yeah, yeah. I have to now come up with questions or something, so that it's going to necessitate me watching.
He also asked what I thought about the Transformers stuff.
Yeah, what do you think about the Transformers news?
I think Transformers 3 is going to be much better than Transformers 2.
Okay.
And the fact that it's got a Victoria's Secret model, Rosie Huntington-Whitley, doesn't matter at all. I mean, let's face it. Megan Fox was not...
She was an accessory.
She was not an integral part of any of those stories.
She was a pearl necklace.
Yes. Yeah. It could have been any actress in those roles.
It couldn't have been any actress. I really don't think you could have put, like, Roseanne Barr in that role.
It could have been any attractive actress.
Although I will say in retrospect, I would have loved to have just seen them put Roseanne Barr shot for shot in Transformers just because it would be hilarious to watch.
Nice.
All right, should we do a Fat Guy 5 before we get out of here?
Yeah, let's do the Fat Guy 5. We got a good one this week, I think.
Yeah, and this is much to the chagrin of Jeff Hall. Mm-hmm. We're not using his suggestion. It's sort of like his suggestion.
I'm sure he'll be mad.
He'll be mad. Well, he's declared that he's taking over the show, and I have to put him in his place.
Right. Yeah. People need to understand what their roles are in this organization.
That's right.
All right. So this is our five favorite Pixar characters.
Yes.
And they're not all individual characters, I guess.
Well, there's reasoning for it. Everything, and we make the rules. Damn it.
Well, yeah. No, it's our list. So whatever. But you take the first one.
I'll do the first one, and this is the entire fish tank from Finding Nemo, because they work as a character, and Pixar's known for having ensemble, you know, rogue galleries of characters. I mean, you've got the bugs in the Bug's Life, and you've got the toys in Toy Story, but you know, the fish tank, you know, with Willem Dafoe and you know, the big guy from Everyone Loves Raymond. I mean, it was such a fantastic group of characters in that one fish tank. So they're one. They're five.
Word.
All right. You're next.
The second one is Russell from Up, because yes. Russell is awesome. Russell's... And it's hard to pick one character from Up.
Oh yeah, we had a little bit of a fight because I wanted Doug.
Yeah, you have Doug, you have Mr. Fredrickson, you have all of this.
You have
but
Alpha.
I feel like Russell really is the character that speaks loudest, I guess. Because it's a talking dog. So there's that.
Well, and he's able to pull more emotion out of the story, even though you had such emotion in there with Carl and Ellie.
Yes, exactly. So there you go.
You want to do the next one? Because I think I'm going to end up with the next two.
Sure. Next one's Edna Mode from The Incredibles.
Yes.
She's a fantastic lady.
And sort of a dark horse here, because The Incredibles had such great characters.
That's another one where you kind of have to find, you know, do you use Jack-Jack? Do you use the villain?
The babysitter.
Yeah, the babysitter. But, you know, I think Edna really is kind of the star of that film. We're really good about picking the dark horse characters out of just about every movie.
Except for the next one.
The next one's the obvious one.
Who does... Who does the voice for Edna?
Not off the top of my head.
Brad Bird.
No.
That is Brad Bird doing the voice of Edna. And it's hysterical. If you watch him in an interview, he will go into that voice, and it's absolutely hilarious to watch him do it.
I love Brad Bird.
He's awesome.
I don't know, like every movie.
Yes. I'll get right on that. next we have Wally from Wally. And again... Even though there are fewer characters on the whole in Wall-E, there's what, like the cockroach would have been a great character. I mean, because he's a fantastic character.
Right.
But Wall-E owns the movie. He's one of the few. It's one of the few Pixar movies that kind of breaks from that sort of. Even though Pixar doesn't have a formula, but there is a sort of a elements that you see in a lot of Pixar movies. You have the rogue gallery of characters. You've got multiple. But Wall-E is a very unique movie in itself. And Wally is a great character.
He's the dude.
He is the man.
with
Sweet. Robot. And the last one is it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. You Go want ahead. Me to do it? Or you?
Oh, it's all. Yeah, this one is all you.
This is just John Ratzenberger as a whole. Just John Ratzenberger because he has become the character actor for Pixar movies. He's in every one that they've ever done. He's Ham in the Toy Story movies. He's a construction foreman. He has small parts like the construction foreman and Up, but he's one of the fat guys in WALL-E. We love fat guys. He's a sous chef Mustafa.
One of the blob people.
Yeah, one of the blob people. He's Mustafa in the one of the chefs in Ratatouille, the abominable snowman, Flea from Bug's Life. He's the fish school in Finding Nemo, mm-hmm. and he's somebody in The Incredibles. Honestly, I need to go watch that movie again because I forget where he is in the movie.
Yeah,
but it's a fantastic. He's such a charmer in these movies,
right?
And he gets the number one spot.
Awesome.
All right. We got some honorable mentions.
Yeah, well, the honorable mentions come from Toy Story 3.
Yes.
And it is Mr. Pickle Pants, voiced by Timothy Dalton.
Yes.
And Trixie, voiced by Kristen Schaal from Flight of the Conchords. And what's special about these two is, you know, they're in one of those small rogues galleries of toys within Toy Story 3. There's several of them.
Yeah.
Apart from the main group. And Mr. Pickle Pants, I have not seen a Pixar character get that many laughs in such short screen time.
Well, I don't know. Chuckles got some good ones there, too.
But, man, that is one funny little character. And Timothy Dalton just pulls it off. And Trixie, there's a moment in the trailer where you see Trixie. She's like, it's just a dinosaur.
Just a dinosaur.
There are several other ones for her, but small characters, small roles getting huge laughs is always appreciated.
These are the definitions of there are no small roles, only small actors, and they don't put small actors in Pixar movies.
Exactly. So, there you go. And it's time for us to go to break. When we come back, we're going to wrap you up and send you out into the world.
Woo!
And we are wrapping you up here on Fat Guys at the Movies. We have exhausted as much airtime as possible, and we will only take several more moments of your life away. That's a promise. If you missed it in our middle segment, third segment, if you're listening to us on the radio, we talked about our favorite Pixar characters, a Michael Bay challenge between myself and Idiot Boxers co-host Meryl Barr, and we talked about how many bajillions of dollars Toy Story 3 is going to make.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, it's a lot.
A lot of bajillions.
And now it's time to come to our most famed segment in our own minds.
Well, famous in the magical studio in the sky.
Yes, the world famous DVD Roundup. Okay, that was in 3D. And this week, I've got a bunch of them this week.
You do.
A lot of good stuff, especially on Blu-ray, mm-hmm. stuff that I enjoyed. The Book of Eli, which I enjoyed. The ending's a little weird, but the movie looks great on Blu-ray. A lot of cool special features.
It does look good on Blu-ray. I will give it that.
I enjoyed the entire experience of that film. Yeah. Flash Gordon on Blu-ray looks really great, which I did not expect. I expected Flash Gordon to look kind of dumb.
What was the name again? Who Gordon?
Flash.
Savior of the universe!
Okay. Yeah. Youth and Revolt, which is one of the most underrated movies of last year, but very, very, very funny film. Although, didn't it come out this year in theaters?
It came out this year, yeah. It was like.
Is it a 2010 movie? Yeah, I saw it at Austin Film Festival, like, right at the end of last year.
Oh.
But very good movie. Michael Cera, it's to this day one of my favorite Michael Cera performance, which he plays two roles.
In which he plays Michael Cera. And bad Michael Cera.
And evil Michael Cera. But the evil Michael Cera is a lot of fun. Yes. Mary and Max, which is last year's Sundance opening film. It's a stop-motion animated. Or no, was it last year or the year before? Wow. I don't remember. Stop-motion animated films. It's claymation. It's very much Wallace and Gromit style. Oh. But it's this very dark and sad story, and it's wonderful. And it stars voices of Philip Seymour Hoffman, Toni Collette. Very, very, very good movie. And then Supernatural Season 1. Here's a show that I'm starting to get into. I've watched...
Just Season 1, or are you watching it as...
I'm starting to get into Season 1, and I'm going to move on from there.
Yeah.
So it was nice to have season one on Blu-ray to kind of...
Because they already have them out on DVD. And I think they released them, like, the first couple seasons on HD DVD. But now it's on Blu-ray. But you know what? With Warner Brothers, I think you can send back your DVDs and get in like for $4.
And get the Blu-rays for upgrade. But I will say this about Supernatural, because I just started watching it from the beginning. I'm amazed at how much gore they get on screen.
It's a bit
for
bloody.
A show that's on the CW.
It's a bit bloody. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. The CW has such a reputation, and it's deservedly earned. Just this, you know, Gossip Girl, fluffy, teenage,
not even tween,
it's teenage, angsty kind of, you know, Dawson Creek kind of stuff. And like I said, it's an earned reputation. This is not unfairly lofted by people.
Right.
But Supernatural, I mean, it is sort of the teen version of The X-Files. It's a Monster of the Week show.
Right.
But
it's... It definitely doesn't fit that traditional CW mold.
It's not bad. I mean, it's actually, it's got the hot young stars and all, but it's still, it's an entertaining show to watch.
Yeah, exactly. So there. What do you got?
Mine, I've got, well, let's start with the lesser ones. We got The Secret Life of the American Teenager, Volume 4. I know that you love that show on ABC Family.
Well, of course.
Which
who
actually,
doesn't?
It's not a bad show. I mean, you know, it is what it is. It's an ABC Family teen show, so it's, you know, it's not going to be for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Sanctuary Season 2 on DVD. That's the virtual set show with Amanda Tapping from Stargate fame.
Mm-hmm.
There's Burma VJ, which is a documentary. I still have to watch this. I was sent, like, screeners.
I've heard it's an excellent... Excellent documentary.
Yeah, I mean, it's supposed to be really good. I just haven't watched it yet. I apologize. Adopted with Pauly Shore is out. Somebody has to watch that, I guess. And then there's Air Bud.
And it has to be you.
Air Bud World Pup is coming out with a special edition in time for the World Cup. Isn't that a great movie?
Oh, that's funny.
Kablam. There's When in Rome.
That's hilarious.
Did you like When in Rome?
I didn't see it.
I thought it was cute. I mean, the best part of When in Rome, because it's the one where Kristen Bell, she steals toys for, not toys, coins from a fountain, and other people fall in love with her. The best part is the characters that are the guys that fall in love with her, which is like John Heder and Will Arnett and Danny DeVito and Dax Shepard, who is surprisingly funny in the movie.
Who's been surprisingly funny in several movies.
Yeah, yeah. But
Lately,
there's also...
Baby Mama comes to mind.
Yeah, yeah, he was good in that. There's also Darkman on Blu-ray.
Yeah, very
Sam
cool.
Sam Raimi, an awesome movie. And then, of course, my top picks of the week are American Dad Volume 5 and
mm-hmm.
Family Guy Volume 8. They're both uncensored, so of course you get the extra swearing and stuff that's not bleeped out on Fox. And they come in a nice little set, so...
Lovely.
They're funny shows, man. If you haven't watched them, they're worth
they
watching.
They are very funny shows.
And you can also pick it up in the middle. You don't have to go watch the first four seasons of American Dad to understand what's going on.
Right, exactly.
Stinker.
Cool. Stinker is, what is a stinker?
Showgirls on Blu-ray. It's the 15th anniversary. Why not watch the highest grossing NC-17 movie ever?
Yeah. Definition? I mean, it's not a good movie at all.
No, it's terrible.
Whew. Moving on, review wrap up. Neither one of us saw Jonah Hex, not for lack of trying. So it escapes the clutches of the preemptive suck, barely.
Mm-hmm.
And Toy Story 3 gets a rocks.
Total rocks
from
both of us.
Everybody, all around. Next week, we've got both Night and Day and Grown Ups, which I think we're both going to be able to review
yes.
for the show, which will be nice. In the meantime, head over to fatguysthemovies.com. There's a lot going on over there, including additional podcasts and interviews and audio reviews and just everything Kevin Carr, which you got to get some of that. So until next week... Have fun at the movies.
Ta-ta. We should do the show as Daleks.
Welcome to Fat Guys at the Movies!
Wow. That would get old. Well, yeah, no, it's already old.
It's already old. I couldn't even get through the title of the show.